welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Tonight I have the most fantastic guest on the show. She's an amazing woman, lots of energy, lots of character, lots of wisdom. Welcome to the show, Sheila Morago. How are you?
Thanks. You know, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. I hear you got a few storms down in Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, we are in the in tornado season here, and so we've got a few pockets of flooding, some tornado watches going on, and always fun weather here in Oklahoma City, and the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I heard,
I should say.
I heard they shut down River Spirit, right?
Yeah, they did this afternoon. The River Spirit Margaritaville facility is right on the Arkansas River, and they let out a bunch of flood water, so they're expecting to be pretty flooded, and so they closed down, evacuated it, and according to them, they'll be closed for 3 to 5 days, depending on how high the water gets and how long it
takes
for everything to get dried out. Yeah, it is, but, you know, they got a good heads up, and they took care of relocating all of their hotel guests and got people off the floor, and, you know, it's all about staying safe and keeping people safe. So they did a really good job
of
making sure that happened.
Yeah, and that's part of living in Oklahoma, right? All the storms and tornadoes and everything. It's just part of it.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine told me when I first moved here that, you know, Oklahoma weather is proof that there's a schizophrenic God. You know, just if you don't like the weather one minute, just wait, it'll change.
I like that, schizophrenic God. I love that. Tell me, you crap me up all the time. Tell me a little bit about where you were born, your roots, you know, what your parents did. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I was born on the Gila River Indian Reservation. I was raised there. I was the first of four children. My dad, when I was born, was playing baseball. He was a pitcher for the University of Arizona. My dad worked in a department store. Yeah, my dad just last year got inducted in the University of Arizona Hall of Fame, Sporting Hall of Fame.
Wow, he was
so that
the
was
pitcher.
Really cool.
The pitcher.
Yeah, yeah, he was. He was.
That's amazing.
He was awesome.
Was he the first Native American person to be on the team and be a pitcher or something like that, or?
Well, he was definitely the first Native American to get inducted in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, he was quite a catch back then for baseball. He went to the University of Arizona right out of a tiny little mining town called Ajo, Arizona, where he went to high school, and my mom did too. And then was drafted by the Boston Red Sox out of college. So
really?
Yeah, he was a really good pitcher.
Wow.
Back in his time. Doesn't like to talk about
long
it a lot,
he...
but he was forced to.
How long did he play for them?
He actually only made it to spring training, and then he messed up his knees. So unfortunately,
messed up his knees.
You know, yeah, both of them actually.
He had an injury.
So,
wow.
So he literally had to, you know, hang up the pro baseball dream and went to work for the Tribe, but stayed in it.
Wow, that must have been a tough one.
Playing res ball. Yeah, for him, I'm sure it was. I mean, he was definitely a major, you know, athlete. And back then, it was a pretty exciting time for him.
Yeah, and unheard of probably in Native Nations to have someone get so high, you know, in the sports world. You told me that he once told you
tiny town.
The mining town, yeah. You told me he once told you, don't let your education get in the way of your college.
Yes. I think it was something I think I took way too much to heart. But that he was, he actually wanted to make sure that I experienced college life. You know, coming from the reservation, it was, you know, straight from the reservation to university was, you know, he might have thought it was a little daunting for me, which it was in the beginning. And, you know, he wanted to make sure that I didn't, you know, become a wallflower and hide away and not experience all the stuff that was getting opened up to me. So it was really good. It was really good advice, and I'm sure he thought that with my personality that I probably needed a little push every now and then.
And what was it like growing up on the res back then? This was before gaming, right?
Oh, way before gaming. We hadn't even thought about that
yet.
It was, you know, honestly, it was very family-oriented, but, you know, jobs were scarce. You know, the access to health care was through the Indian clinic, and you waited a long time. You know, we had – you went to school. If you wanted to go to public school, you went to school off the res, which meant, you know, good – hour to 2 hour bus ride every day in the morning.
Wow.
We went to school in Casa Grande, and while it's not that far away, you had to stop every two blocks to pick people up. And we lived way in the boonies, so it rained, and we all had to go home early because the dirt roads wouldn't, you know, they were afraid the bus couldn't get through. So, yeah, it was an interesting time.
Yeah, very interesting, and it's amazing how far we've gotten from back to. You know, from there, what was your what did you think you were going to do when you grew up? Did you have any indication that you would be in the hospitality business?
Oh God, no! I was actually in pre-nursing for the first 2 years of college.
Mm-hmm.
My godmother and my aunt, my dad's sister, was a nurse, and she actually was the CEO of the Gila River Hospital when she was alive. But you know, it was just sort of one of those things where they thought I was going to be a nurse because that's what she did back then. You know, you were a nurse, you were a teacher as a female, you didn't do anything, you know, too crazy. And so I was in nursing school for a couple of years. Luckily for me, my aunts and another great aunt was also a nurse. And they took me aside one summer and they're like, you know, buddy, I'm sorry, you're not cut out to be a nurse.
It's not for you.
You don't follow rules very well.
Yeah. So what was you, I
so
know
yeah,
you had a
so
very
they,
interesting.
They talked me out of that one.
Yeah. I know you had a very interesting kind of your first hospitality jobs. How did that happen? What happened? How did you fall into it in the beginning?
Well, in the very beginning, I was going to go to summer school, and I needed a job, a part-time job, and, you know, back then, you could work in bars at 18, and so I applied for a cocktail waitress job in a bar that was close to campus, and I got bit by the bug. It was a lot of fun. It was a great bar. It's not around anymore. But it was a very hopping college bar and, you know, moved up in the ranks pretty darn quick. I was a head cocktail waitress for pretty fast and then trained to be a bartender. And I was working all the good shifts and making some pretty decent money in tips. Back then, you know, you lived on tips. You made nothing in salary. And, you know, it was nice to come home with, you know, a few $100 in your pocket. So.
Yeah. Back then, that was quite a bit of cash. Still is now.
Oh yeah.
Still is now.
I led a pretty nice life back then with just tip money, and so yeah, I got bit. I enjoyed myself. It was so much fun, and you know, and there becomes the part where you enjoy your college life and not your education part.
Right, exactly. And what happened after that? You went on some other wild adventures, and I know it's a very unique experience. What happened after that?
I did. Well, you know, I decided that college, you know, of course, you know, I was making a lot of money, and so I decided college was a little bit too financially restrictive for me. So I continued working, got to work in some pretty fun bars and restaurants during that time in Tucson, and a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to work for one bar, and I said, sure. And I didn't realize it was a chain. And within about a year, they hired me as an assistant manager. The big boss flew in from California. It was a very large company that owned bars and restaurants all through California, Colorado, and Arizona, and they made me a GM, and I got to move to Los Angeles and was there on and off for about 5 years and got to manage some really fun places.
Let me ask you something. We talked about this before, and we've always talked about with the women that have been on the show about the, you know, the adversity because of gender. And for some reason, you have sidestepped that. Can you tell me a little bit about what is it about you that you've never had that kind of issue?
Well, a lot of it, I think, is one, I don't really ever back away from a challenge. That's probably good and bad. But the second part is, you know, I was lucky, very lucky, in the fact that that company didn't see gender as a problem. If you could do the work, you got the job. There were very few females that worked in that company as GMs at the time, but the ones that did were every bit as capable as men were. And, you know, we got some really good placements in some very fun areas. So, you know, I was lucky enough to hold the GM position over at the Malibu Inn, which, if you've ever been to Malibu, it's a wonderful place. And back then it was a, you know, hop and bar scene. So, you know, I was very lucky in that. And, you know, thank God that there was a you know, the owners of that company didn't see gender as a stumbling block.
Right. But in the course of you working in that time period, did you ever have any instances where, because back then it was, you know, the women in working in companies that were, you know, male heavy, so to speak, that was an issue all around the country, but for some reason you've never really seen it that way, right? I mean, is it your character?
No,
what is it about?
It could have been just the fact that we were in California and everybody was, you know, free and easy and nobody really looked at it that way. But, you know, I was always encouraged to do my best in that. And as long as I could do the job, you know, nobody had any issues with that. You know, occasionally there was, you know, a few, you know, customers more than anything else that had an issue with that and wanted to speak to the man in the house, in the bar, which I would always send the biggest male that I had as my doorman to go see them. But,
right.
Yeah, no, I was maybe just the right place at the right time, but I never had to worry about that when I was working in that industry.
And you really haven't encountered that through the other courses of your jobs and all that. You attribute that to your character, or?
Maybe that's part of it. But again, I've always had bosses that recognize, you know, the fact that you could do the job. You know, it's never been an option that, you know, you're a female, so you can only do this.
Right.
You know, getting into gaming, it was, you know, we had a lot of, you know, great female leaders at the time. And so that was never a question, I don't think, at the time. And I went up against a lot of men in some of my job interviews. So, you know, that's just been a great part of what I get to do.
What makes you good and at these jobs that are, you know, people orientated? Because it seems like your character is really good with people. And I think in life, that's the secret. But what else is it?
Well, I mean, being good at people, I think I got a great on-the-job training with working in the bars and restaurants and having a very large family. That also helps. But, you know, being able to adapt and work amongst all different kinds of people. And, you know, maybe being a female actually helps in the fact that, you know, I'm able to move around issues where it's not, where I don't take it as personally as some people might. You know, I'm able to talk with multiple tribal leaders, casino operators, industry folks, and able to work through their problems without having incidences or bad feelings about it. So maybe it is because I'm a female, or maybe it's just because, you know, I'm blessed with the fact that I can sit down and listen and work out problems.
You also said to me, no fear. You can't be afraid. Remember you said that?
Yeah,
what do you mean by that?
You know, well, you know, I think, and like I told you, fear to me is a temporary emotion. And that's just to me. You know, I get scared? Absolutely. But I know that, you know, that this too shall pass. And if I fall down and scrape my knee or am not as successful as I would like to be in a certain situation, then, you know, you take with you what you learned in that and move on. You know, you fall down more than often than you want to admit, but you also have some really good successes, and you take those successes and ride them as far as you can, and take the failures. And you know, sometimes I think we're harder on ourselves than we should be, of calling things absolute failures when it's probably just one or two little things that didn't go perfect. But you learn from them and you apply it to the next time. So, you know, fear to me has never been crippling, I guess. It's always been, I take it on as a little bit of a challenge every now and then. And that could be a good or bad thing, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, it's something that you were saying, that you just get up, pick yourself up, and keep moving forward, right?
Absolutely. You know, the bad part is if you took that and just, you know, didn't get up. And, you know, there are so many lessons we learn when we overcome those fears and learn from our mistakes. And we can take them and just make ourselves more successful and better at what it is we do. Everything is a lesson
now,
in life.
Everything. Now, after the GM job, you went back to Tucson, right? And that's
yeah,
where you fell
I
in.
Did.
You had the opportunity for your gaming job. Explain us a little bit about how that happened and how you fell into marketing.
Well, a friend of mine opened a bar in Tucson and asked me if I'd come and help him get it up and running. And I said, I'm done with bars in the next year. But yeah, I can do that. And just so happened that, you know, Gila River decided to go into gaming as I was leaving that job. And my family, my dad specifically, and my uncle said, I think you should apply for a job here. Actually, it wasn't, I think you should apply for a job. It was more like you're coming home. It's time.
Mm.
And luckily for me, it was, you know, they were just hiring their management staff and their employees for their first little casino. And they thought I'd be, you know, since I was in the F&B industry, that, you know, the food and beverage department would be a good place for me to start. But fortunately or unfortunately, they already had someone picked out for that job. So another community member, she did a great job at it. And I went in for an interview, and the GM at the time said, well, you had to do a little bit of marketing, right, when you were in these prior jobs. And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, why, how would you like to be the marketing director? And the rest is history. And like,
wow.
You know, I hadn't been a marketing director before, and I did the whole, like, yeah, sure, I can do that. You know, and jumped into the deep end of the pool with no floaties. But it was a great learning experience, and it was the best decision I've ever made my whole entire life. And I got to thank my community for being so supportive of letting me do that at the time.
You know, you're really amazing. You the way, the analogy you just spoke about, where you said I jumped into the deep end with no floaties, that's been a constant in your life, and you really do have no fear, and you go in and you confront it. We've had a few conversations about this, but not all women are as confident as you are. And so for the women that are listening out there, what that might feel timid and afraid of taking up, you know, these kind of challenges that you did, how do you change that? because you have a character that has no fear and you're willing to jump into the deep end with no floaties. But a lot of women don't have that. How can you give them some advice?
Surround yourself with supportive women friends. I mean, you know, like I said, it's not that I don't have any fear. I do. And I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by some very, very good friends that, you know, if I get a little bit, you know, going back into my shell, they're like, come on, let's none of that. Let's go. You can do this. Come on. And, you know, it's about having friends and mentors and people you look up to that can show you the way. I believe every woman has it in her to be whatever they want to be. And they, you know, there's a lot of examples out there. Find a mentor, find, you know, have at least one supportive friend that tells you, you know, come on, you can do this. Don't be afraid. Go for it. Because for every single time that you go for it, it's taking one little small bite out of the apple. And, you know, pretty soon you've got everything that you've ever wanted. And, you know, I truly believe that every woman is capable of doing that. And it doesn't mean that they have to be a CEO. It doesn't mean that they have to be, you know, top in their field. You know, I mean, this is, you know, truly, you know, being a great mom is something that is, that would make me crawl into a shell. I'm fearful of that. So, you know, it just depends on, you know, what your situation is and, you know, where you want to go. But I believe every woman can go and be the best that she can in whatever field it is she wants to be in.
You said to me, it's not how many times you fall down, it's how many times you get back up.
Absolutely. Without question, and that goes for anything that you want to do. And that's for females and males. You know, nobody, and there's always going to be those people who count how many times you fall, but surround yourself with the people that count how many times you get up.
And you also say that the women, they have the talent, they just don't believe in themselves enough.
Well, sometimes, I mean, you know, we're unfortunately in a business, a gaming industry that, you know, is very much male dominated. Not so much, luckily, in the Indian gaming portion of it. You know, a lot of our tribes come from matriarchal societies, so they're used to having women tribal leaders, women councilmen or councilwomen, and women in higher titles in the Indian gaming industry, more than it is in the commercial. So, you know, I think that, you know, we are naturally born leaders. We are leaders of families. We are leaders of communities, and we are leaders of governments. And, you know, those are the women that you look up to.
Last question on this subject. What is your advice for younger women coming up in the business?
Take whatever opportunity is available to you and hold on with it with both hands and make the best of it and shine. I mean, there are so many opportunities out there for everyone, and especially for women. And, you know, as long as you have, you know, the gumption and the fortitude, you can do whatever you want. And so when given the opportunity, take it. And if you fail, then you know what? Nobody can fault you for it. But you've learned a lesson, and then the next time that a different opportunity comes in, you know what it is you're going to do. So that is my biggest thing, is that, you know, when you get those opportunities, take them and, you know, like I like to say, you know, jump into the deep end of the pool. It's the water's fine.
you got a great job after Gila River. You were asked to join NIGA, and you worked with Rick Hill and Chairman Stevens, two juggernauts in the native gaming industry. Tell us a little bit about what that was like for you and how it rounded off your career in a way.
Oh my gosh, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. I have to thank my old boss, Jake Coyne, for giving me that call and asking me to come and join the NIGA staff. I was lucky enough to be in D.C. working for NIGA during Rick Hill's, final couple of years in Chairman Stevens' first year. Being able to work for two very, very capable leaders and literally, hitting the ground running and being able to work with all the tribes as they were opening casinos, starting initiatives for gaming and just being on the ground, being able to watch how people worked in the legislative arena and how the tribal leaders would come in and advocate for their sovereign rights. I mean, gosh, I could go on and on. It was such an eye-opening and wonderful experience that I can never repay in terms of being able to do that. Open my eyes.
Yeah,
to
they're pretty amazing people.
Oh yeah, and people you get to learn from and just be around. I mean, just watching them work is something to behold.
After that, you took on the job at OIGA, where you are now, and what was that like? Why did you take that opportunity after NIGA?
Well, after NIGA, I went back to Arizona for a little bit. I worked on their first initiative that expanded their gaming compacts.
That's right, AIGA, right?
Yeah, for 8 years. And, when OIGA was, I was talking to them, when are you going to be able to become, the first ED that an association has ever had? So when they offered me the job, I jumped at it. It was one opportunity that I could move someplace I've never been to. And again, starting a new experience, work with all the amazing tribes here in Oklahoma. And, when are you going to ever be able to work in the, third largest revenue generator in the country? So really, it was a lot of it. They said we need an executive director now. It was 8 years ago, and I was like, great, I'm moving to Oklahoma, tornadoes and all.
Tell us a little bit about OIGA.
What's that? A little bit about OIGA? Well, it is.
Yeah, tell us what you got going on there. You're a bullet. So tell us what you got going on there.
Well, in our 25th year of trade shows here in Oklahoma, I mean, if you think about it, in Oklahoma, I was working at NIGA when their first trade shows were happening, and they were in a little tiny hotel resort area that one of the tribes owned called Arrowhead, and their booth spaces were a fold-out table that you got to put some brochures on. And it was a chance for them to do some educational training, and that's what it was. And it grew, and it was over at Choctaw in their bingo hall for a while. And now we can only put it into, the big convention centers in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. So, representing, the 31 some odd tribes here that have gaming and the 143 operations we have here in Oklahoma, this trade show has become the biggest little show in Indian gaming. So it is large. It's a lot of fun. And we've been able, OIGA, got to give credit to the tribes who have done this forever. They've grown this from a little tiny seedling to a very large and important show in the gaming industry.
Now, I know that I've done all the conferences, and what I love about your conferences is it's so affordable, but you have a big impact. There's so many people there, and you still have some opportunities in terms of space, right? If people want to call you, and is there still some opportunities?
Yeah.
Yep.
We have about 20 some odd 10 by 10s available. We've got one 20 by 20. So literally that's all I have left right now. And this show is in July, so I'm pretty excited about that. We have some sponsorship opportunities, and we are wide open when it comes to registration. I mean, for any member of a tribe and any employee of a tribal casino, no matter if it's Oklahoma or not, anywhere in the country, It's $250 for registration, and that gets you everything.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And we want to
usually
keep it at that price point.
Over 1,000. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. You've done such a great job. One of the things that is always talked about, especially now, because of the proliferation of gaming, and especially in Oklahoma, have we gone too far? Is there too many casinos now? Is there enough for everybody? I mean, 143 casinos. It seems like a lot for one state.
It is. It sounds like it, but you have to understand, you know, Oklahoma is a big state, number one. And we have a size ranges that go from, you know, WinStar, which's got the largest floor in the world at this point, to a C-store and a travel stop that has 15, 20 machines and everything in between. So, you know, you count a casino as if it's a, you know, a travel stop, which we have a lot of those. We have some areas that people would probably argue are a little oversaturated in terms of the number of casinos per population. But we have a lot of areas in rural Oklahoma that gaming is the largest employer in that county. And without that, that town would be gone. The amount of jobs that it offers allows those small little rural towns to flourish. So, you know, while it may sound like a lot of facilities, they are self-sustaining, they are doing well, and, you know, knock on wood, Oklahoma has been one state that has never taken a dip in growth since they've started, and knock on wood that we're not going to see that anytime soon.
You said that the growth is self-controlling. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, it, you know, Oklahoma is really lucky in the fact that, you know, there are no limits to the amount of facilities a tribe can open, the size of the facility they can open. So tribes are very cognizant of where they're putting their facilities and how big they are. They do it as a business decision, not as just a, you know, build it and they will come model. They look at the availability of population and market. And, you know, if it's more of a C-store that area requires, then that's what they're going to open. They are very good at making sure that, you know, they are not oversaturating a certain part of the market, that they are putting facilities that are the right size and the right mix into the areas that they're looking at. So nothing is done haphazardly. Everything is done as a pure business decision. And it's very structured. I mean,
structured.
You know, you don't want to just put in a facility just because you can.
Sure, sure. And that's important. Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be chaos. Sheila, what is your message to Native Nations, you know, in the future moving forward?
Continue to grow. Continue to look at other economic opportunities. You know, I'm in gaming, but I do realize that this is not the panacea of what we all need. We have to look at diversifying. We have to become stronger. We have to become very strong sovereign nations. And to do that, we need to spread our eggs in a lot of different baskets. And I'm hoping that, you know, gaming is that spark that keeps everything moving in the right direction. You know, we don't look like we did 30 years ago, and 30 years we're not going to look like this. So it's constantly changing, and the more diversification that we can have, the more opportunity that will give us for our youth and to come home and work and contribute to our governments and our society. And, you know, that is the goal.
How do you balance work and life?
Not well. I am seriously not very good at that. I is one discipline I have not learned at all. But I am super, super lucky in the fact that, you know, I love my job. It is very rare in anybody's life that your heart and your head can work in the same direction and in the same place. And so for me, work is fun, and I like it a lot. And so that makes it not feel as, you know, depressing that I have to go to work every day, because I love my job. So So, you know, this is, to me, work is fun and work isn't work. It's something that I enjoy doing. So that could be the problem of why I don't balance very well.
Well, you told me that friends, you have friends that make sure that you stop.
Oh, yeah.
Once in a while, right?
I do. And, you know, and the most annoying one is when someone texts me or my phone goes off and I see an email and we're in the middle of watching a movie and, you know, here at my place. And, you know, it's literally the hands come out and, like, hand it over. Nope. We're watching a movie. Would you please just hand over the phone? So, yeah, they will take it away from me periodically.
I can relate.
And give me and, you know, force me to take a break from it, which I totally appreciate. At the time, I might get a little snippy about it, but I totally appreciate it.
Yeah, you need to turn off sometimes. But I'm sure they can't hold you back from jumping into the deep end without the floaties. That is something I think you're just born with that. I know from talking to you a few times. You're the no floaty girl.
And sometimes you have the friends that encourage you to do that. So you know what it
all. Oh
it,
man,
it all goes in
the that's
same
so
place.
Funny. That's so funny. Should we take some calls? We got a whole bunch of callers
sure.
here that I just you know chomping at the bit here
town.
To get out of town. Yeah, exactly. Let me patch in someone here. Hang on a sec.
Okay.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Sheila?
Hey, good evening, Tino. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
Good. It's Mike from New York.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Good to hear you. Mike was recently on our show also, and great guy.
Sheila, pleasure to talk to you. So I had a question about Indian gaming. I heard you allude to the fact that you see a little bit of a difference at the top of the management spectrum where women are perhaps a little bit more welcome in leadership roles, which is a really interesting concept. I'm wondering from a business standpoint, operational standpoint, if there are other differences between a commercial casino and tribal.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good.
Well, from an operational standpoint, our casinos from commercial to tribal gaming work exactly the same way. I mean, any operations person will tell you that the rules are the rules and everybody has to abide by them. I think where we sort of split off is what it means for it to be a tribal casino. It's the word tribal. You know, everybody in that facility is looking at and appreciating what tribal facilities do, and that means, you know, making sure that our governments and our communities have the money to do what we need to do, taking care of our elders, educating our youth, making sure that we have running water and electricity and housing and health care. And so, you know, while we're, you know, I don't mean to be mean, but, you know, commercial facilities are there to make money for their shareholders. We are making money for the betterment of our community, and I think every single employee knows that responsibility and takes it to heart.
Hmm. So there's almost a philanthropic arm to your operation.
If you want to put it that way, but our operations are 100% taxed by government. And all that money goes into the improvement of our governments and our community. So,
right.
It is more of a mantra and a joy for us to do what we do for the betterment of our people.
Do you see the pressures of Tino alluded to competition? Do you see the pressures of outside business forces impacting that overall mission?
I actually see it in an opposite direction. You know, tribal gaming is now 51% of the total gaming market in the United States. We have 28 states where exclusivity is the key to how we work. And so you now see a lot of our tribal facilities going out and managing commercial ventures. So I don't see that as a downside at all. I see it as opportunity for us.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm enjoying the listen. I was tuning in on the way home, and my evening has finally stopped unless I got a phone call like you will. But I'm enjoying the listen.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. You have a good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, he's great. He's up in New York, so he's definitely a character.
The accent is awesome.
yeah, exactly. Hang on one sec. All right, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Sheila?
Evening, Sheila. Evening, Tino. This is Nick Lawson. How are you guys?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Great. I actually grew up probably 70 miles from the Oklahoma border, and I'll tell you, I was in my 20s, they started putting in small Indian casinos along the border in Oklahoma and Port of Texas and Oklahoma City where you're at. And I've watched them grow into nice facilities and now really nice facilities. I was wondering, what the plan is, and like, how do you see Oklahoma gaming going in the near future, long term?
We're working now on expanding some of the facilities along the Texas border. I know Durant just announced a expansion, and they broke ground last month on it. So that should be getting bigger and better, and that is a beautiful facility if you've never been there. I see a lot of the casinos maturing more in the amenities department. So you'll probably see a lot of them, especially along the borders, doing more hotels, more entertainment venues, more restaurants, and possibly more pure entertainment facilities with movie theaters and bowling alleys and laser tag facilities and game rooms. Those areas are lacking in some of those entertainment options, and a lot of the tribes have stepped in to grow that portion of the market. So while we may not be opening up floors and getting bigger floors, the amenities portion of it is definitely on the upswing here.
Great. Have you become an OU fan, or are you still loyal to Arizona?
I am still an Arizona Wildcat. I don't, football is not good, and I am not, and basketball was disappointing this year. Women's softball is doing awesome. So,
all right.
But I did not want to get into this, OU versus OSU, rivalry. I have enough rivalry in my family between ASU and U of A.
I'm not sure you can avoid it. Yeah, I visited the Durant property. I definitely see the expansion you guys, the whole state has had. I didn't know it was the third largest gaming for tribal in the United States. That's impressive.
It's actually the second largest in the United States for tribal. It's the third overall behind Vegas, behind Nevada, California, and then Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Oh, wow. That's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, well, the North Dallas metropolitan area, Durant's a great attraction. Sure.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
That area, the northern part of Dallas-Fort Worth, is just growing like crazy. I drove through Plano a while back, and I was just shocked at what Plano looks like now compared to when I was in high school and went through there. So,
pretty incredible.
It's unbelievable. Do you see, that area right there at the border of Texas becoming like a mini Vegas, or do you see it kind of step laddering into just growth?
You got two really large casinos there that, with Durant opening up their expansion, you're going to have probably the one in two biggest facilities here in Oklahoma right there on that border. So I don't see really any more coming in on that part. But you'll see probably some expansion on the Arkansas border and Missouri.
Great. All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good evening.
Thanks so much.
You too.
Take care, Nick. Have a good night. Great questions. All right. Here we go. Hello, do you have a question for Sheila?
Hey, Sheila, Tino, really appreciate you having me on the show today. This is Jess calling from Las Vegas.
Cool, Jess, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. So, you know, Sheila, you talked about your you know, time at Gila River and starting out there, just jumping in as a director of marketing, having never done it before. I'm curious what your process was. I assume you had a lot of, you know, building up from scratch. And I'm curious, what did you necessarily pull from peers in the industry or from other properties? Where did you go to get that information to learn about how to build something from scratch?
Everywhere I possibly could. Barring anything. you know, fascinating experience. But I did have a lot of people around us at the time. We had some consultants that worked with us in the Phoenix market, was able to actually grow that marketing department into its own buying portion. So we never, you know, had a buyer for our media. And luckily enough, you know, was able to actually get the tagline, you know, go to the river, Gila River Casino, back in the old days, was one of the first things we did. So I watched everything. I learned very quickly and was, you know, and like I said, we borrowed every great idea that I saw, and what worked, what didn't work. And, you know, 3 years later, we had opened up, you know, 3 new facilities. So it worked. It worked, and
sure.
Learned a lot from Vegas too, trust me.
Okay. Awesome. One more question. I'm you know, everybody in the country is talking about sports betting this, sports betting that. First, you know, when do you see sports betting being you know, the windows actually opening up in Oklahoma? And then, you know, I think everybody's asking, you know, what are your major concerns? What do you see the biggest challenging being? But I'm curious, what are you looking forward to if sports betting and when sports betting becomes legal in Oklahoma?
I don't see it happening for at least another 2 years. The legislative session is closing in the next couple of weeks here in Oklahoma. There are no gaming bills on the table at this point. I know that, you know, the tribes and the state have been working extremely well together to put, you know, to have this such a successful market. And so they have to get through, you know, compacts. We're very lucky in the fact that we have an evergreen clause here, which means if we can't agree, then the current compact moves on for another 15 years. So, you know, it is going to be totally up to the tribal leaders and the state administration as to how they want to proceed on that. But I don't see it at least for another couple of years moving.
Okay. And you, what 2 years from now, what would you most be looking forward to when the first window opens in sports betting?
Betting on my Arizona Wildcats.
There you go. Well, they got some time to get back up there in terms of basketball.
Yeah.
They got some time to get back up there.
I'll
awesome.
Be waiting for a basketball season to rebuild in those 2 years so they have a good shot at it.
Perfect amount of time. All right. Thank you. Have a great
night.
Thank you so much.
You too.
Have a great night. Bye-bye. Yeah, sports is a big thing, eh? You guys are got the rivalries going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's gnarly.
In my family, the ASU U of A football game is there's them fighting words in our family. Half of us went to U of A, half of us went to ASU.
Yeah. Hello, this is Tino. Do you have a question for Sheila?
Yes, I do. Hello, Sheila and Tino. It's Rogelio up in North Dakota.
How are you, Rogelio?
How are you?
Good.
But you're originally
good.
From Arizona, so are you? What sports teams do you follow?
I was actually born. She's going to know exactly where this is at. This is funny. I was born and raised in Sierra Vista, close to Bisbee, which is about what is that, Sheila? 60 miles south of Tucson.
Yes, I know exactly where that is.
So and I,
wow.
And then my family's all from Tucson. I went to school in Tucson as well. So bear down. That's that's my team.
Bear down.
That's
bear
funny.
Down.
That's funny. Sheila, you had an amazing story. I love the history and everything that you spoke about and what you went through, and congratulate you and wish you the best of luck on everything you do moving forward. Curious, is there any personal goals that you would like to still accomplish or you foresee in the future that you want to tackle or complete or anything like that? Any big projects that you kind of left out?
I don't know. I mean, Tina and I were talking about it. I'm getting up there, buddy. So maybe going home and retiring well would be my next option. But, you know, honestly, as long as I love what I'm doing, as long as the tribes have faith in me to continue doing my job, I want to continue doing this for as long as I possibly can. There are really no new associations that are opening up that need a new ED, and I honestly think that I should leave that for the younger folk. But no, I maybe getting much better at the balancing of work and personal time. That
there
may
you
be
go.
The
yeah, that's a new one. Yeah, definitely start to travel or something.
The
life balance.
Learning to travel for pleasure and not for work.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
The life balance.
That's it. That'll
yep.
be my new goal.
Yep.
Thanks for pointing it out to me.
That'll be your new goal. Mm-hmm. Yep. Rogelio, did you have another question?
Nope. That's it.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling in. Really appreciate it. You have a great evening.
Thank you.
You too.
Thanks so much. Okay, bye-bye. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Sheila?
All right, good evening, Tino. This is Link over in Miami. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. How about you?
Doing well. Sheila, first of all, thank you so much for spending some time with us today and sharing your stories and insight. It's always a great pleasure to be able to learn from people much smarter than myself.
Well, thank
Thanks
you
a lot there.
So much.
Yeah.
No worries. Thank you. I have a question for you. Do you feel as though that there are any challenges which are unique to Oklahoma versus other areas of the country in regards to gaming?
Probably the fact that there are 39 tribes here in the state of Oklahoma. I mean, you know, challenges are just, you know, that of having a lot of different tribes and a lot of different cultures. I don't mean the challenges as a bad thing. You know, we've got a lot of culture and a lot of very strong tribes here. But, you know, that leaves the door wide open for, you know, right now we have 31 tribes that have gaming compacts. That leaves a few more that are out there still that could still get into the market. I don't see that as a challenge as much as an opportunity. But, you know, we just had an election. This administration, this governor seems to be in working very well with the tribes, and I give a lot of credit to the tribes and the administration for getting a good working relationship going right off the bat. So it'll be interesting to see how we progress in the market at this point.
Sounds good. Let me ask you, what are some of the biggest changes you would say you've seen during your career, just in the industry overall?
The growth. I mean, if you think about in my time watching us, and I mean us as Tribal Gaming, go from just, you know, getting into the market, having management contracts with stations, with Harrah's, with gaming companies that were handling our management at the time. And growing so quickly and learning so fast to becoming, you know, leaders in this industry, not just in the tribal gaming industry, but the commercial as well. And now having very few facilities that have management contracts. You know, think about you know, we have grown so quickly in the 30 plus years that we've gone through this, you know, growth. We've surpassed Vegas that started gaming way before we did. So I just, you know, the most important and the most amazing thing is the speed and the size of which we've grown and God, just so fast, kind of unheard of.
No, fascinating. And last question: are there days that you kind of miss the working at one specific gaming location as opposed to being the director, especially with seeing how many things are growing?
Yeah, I actually do miss working in operations. I haven't done it in a really long time, but yeah, I do. You know, that camaraderie of having friends and work colleagues in one facility, definitely miss that. You know, the sort of day by day, you know, 8 to 5 or 8 to 12, depending on what you were doing that day of working. I miss that a lot. But you know what? This is so eye opening, and I get to do so many different things. No day is ever alike, and that is a good thing. So while I might miss my very tidy office and, you know, my assistant and things like that, this is good too.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much for sharing your fascinating story and your great insights.
Thank you so much. You have a good night.
Thanks.
Have a good night. Thanks for calling in. Great questions.
Yeah.
But I'm suspicious about you taking it easy. I don't think that's going to happen. Because I know someone asked me today, so when are you going to retire? I said flat out, I am never retiring. I can go to the beach for a week, and then I get restless. I mean, some people can just lay on the beach for forever. Me, it's like, okay, this is kind of getting boring here. You know,
that would
drive
me absolutely bonkers. In fact, a friend of mine said,
bonkers.
You know, I give you about 7 or 8 days before, you know, you start like volunteering to do just about anything to get your butt out of the house.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's just the character with us. I like people go, well, don't you golf? I go, well, no, I got to be doing something. Is golfing doing something?
Golfing.
I'm like, I don't see it that way. Yeah, golfing is frustrating. Yeah, it doesn't work for me. Oh, man.
Other than the fact that I'm really lousy at it, it doesn't work for me either.
Yeah. Hello, Tina Magnetta. Do you have a question for Sheila?
Yeah, Sheila, this is Kel Houston. How are you?
Kel, buddy, what's shaking?
Well, I thought that this would be a lot of fun to call in and say hello. I got a question for you because our company, you know, works all across the country, and Oklahoma is such a busy, thriving gaming market. The executives seem to stay in place longer. What do you think the success of Oklahoma gaming has to do with in a comparison to like Washington or California, for instance? What do you think is the difference?
We are blessed with borders that have states with no gaming.
Yeah.
Well, that helps.
Very
true.
Little gaming.
Especially Texas.
But you know, but you put your finger right on the head. We have a lot of stability here. The folks that are in this market have been here for a long time. They know their market like the back of their hand. And, you know, the fact that there are so many facilities here, they've gotten really good at promotions and entertainment options and marketing. And, you know, that little bit of competition has done well for them. So, you know, they really do ratchet it up and take it up a notch. And
well,
that has a lot to do with it.
It's really impressive. I mean, I first ventured into Oklahoma back with the Thunderbird when, what was Mickey's, I can't remember his last name now, but that was back before Class 3 got in place. And it was kind of a good old boys network, and boy, it was hard to crack. But once you got inside and got accepted by everybody, it's a tight, tight network, and it's very, very user-friendly, really.
Yeah, and it still is. I mean, think about it. We've only been into Class 3 gaming for, since 2004, 2003?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so, you know, we're still brand new babies when it comes to the Class 3 market, so this is all built on Class 2. And you're right,
yeah.
they are very tight here, and, you know, getting, once you're in, you're in. So, Cal, I hate to say it, but you're going to be around for a very long time here.
Yeah.
Well, you look at the and I don't mean to be throwing out a bunch of stuff here, but, I mean, you look at markets like New Mexico, Northern California, and even in Washington, where the turnover is so great and marketing directors are in and out, they never establish a program.
Mm-hmm.
And Oklahoma, most of these people are sticking around, and you're getting cohesive programs that are building strength and consistency, and it leads to a greater success.
Yeah, amen, Cal. I mean, this is the market for that. They're, you know, and maybe a lot of it has to do with, you know, these guys hire from within. These guys, you know, the operations here, their management is core, either their tribal members or, you know, tribal members from surrounding tribes. So there are very few people out here that are in management that aren't from Oklahoma. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
Boy, I'll say, you know, these people, these tribal entities that go outside and look for some educated guy that's got a degree in whatever, that's never even been in the community and doesn't understand the community, and they pay them big money, and then they can't figure out why it doesn't work.
Yeah, you know, and that was one of the things that I've always said, especially when I was in Arizona, is that a GM and any executive management person that coming into a tribal facility not only needs to know the business side of the casino business, but they have to buy in hook, line, and sinker to the goals of the tribe. I mean, they have to truly believe in it. And if you don't, you know, you can only go so far before your ideas and the tribe's ideas start to go sideways. But, you know, that's why it is really important, especially when you're going out for executive management, that, you know, that they really do believe in the goals of the tribe, not just the goals of the casino business, but the goals of the tribe,
mm-hmm.
because both of those go hand in hand.
Yep.
It's always good when they're on the same page, the goals of the tribe.
Yeah, it always is.
Sometimes
I'm not going to take up any more of your. Go ahead.
No, don't. I was going to say that it's good if they're doing off the same page, but sometimes you got to go with, you know, if they're just at least singing out of the same songbook.
At least.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to poke my head in. Are you coming out to Washington Gaming?
Yep, I'll be there. I'll see you there.
You definitely will. I thank you much, and Sheila, it's always great to talk to you. You're one of the true gems in this business.
Thanks, Kel. Love you.
Love you guys.
Have a good night. Thank you for calling in. Okay, I think we have time for one more. Great questions. This is Tino Magnetti. You have a question for Sheila.
Hi, Tino. Hi, Sheila. Man, I love everything you guys have been saying. Some great stuff here. Hey, Sheila, I have a question for you. You have so much energy, and it's infectious right over the phone. I can feel it. How do you keep that going?
Good
you know,
game,
just
my friend.
Over and over. Yeah.
I mean, to keep that energy level at that all the time, I mean, there's got to be something that you're doing on a regular basis. What would it be?
Like I said, I love my job. I love my work. I'm blessed with being able to do what I love. So, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, the life and work balance isn't good. It never is. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you that I eat well and take a lot of vitamins, because I don't. but I love my job, and I'm surrounded by great friends and family that support me in what I do. So why wouldn't you have
great answer?
Great energy.
That's
for
great.
That.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Because a lot of people turn to, you know, exercise or something else, and you just naturally just enjoy what you're doing so much that you carry it with you all the time. That's great.
Thank
you.
And it's also very genuine. It's
yeah.
It really comes from the heart. She's a pretty amazing person.
Thanks. You're making me blush. You know, you're making me blush.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tino. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too, Neil.
Okay. Amazing show. We went over. But that's okay because the content is amazing. I really appreciate you coming on tonight. We're going to have you back on. Remember, OIGA, the Oklahoma Gaming Conference. And when is it? July? I think July 23rd
July
to the 25th,
22nd,
something like that.
22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
And you still have some spaces available if you want to, you know, a booth or something like that. And, of course, it's did you say it was $275 for admission, right?
$250 for any tribal operation in the United States. $350 if you're an industry person that just wants to come and check out the floor. That gets you everything for 3 days. And you can reach me at sheila.morago@oiga.org. All the information is on our website, www.oiga.org, and you know, shoot me an email. I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Sheila, thanks so much for being on the show, and we'll see you at the conference.
Okay, see you soon, Tina. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye. What an amazing person, and just an amazing show. She got that natural energy that it's just a gift. So our next show is May 30th. It's Thursday, May 30th, and I have Leticia Peterson, who's the GM of Yakima Nation Legends Casino Hotel, and it's going to be a spectacular show. And I'm sure she has a lot of stuff. And actually, I know I've spoken to her before, so it's going to be fantastic. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good night, and we'll see you on the 30th. Take care.